Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
I've always enjoyed ice skating ever since I was very young. I liked to play hockey growing up, and I still do. But the sport that was always just out of reach for me when I was growing up in northern New Hampshire was speed skating. Then I moved to Anchorage after college, and I found lots of different ways to get out skating. Today, I'll go out looking for early season ice in the Susitna Valley with Paxson Wolber and Dana Kerr. Paxson manufactures Nordic skates for a living, and Dana flew in from Juneau so we could try to find some good ice to go skating on. Later in the show, I'll speak with Brad Cook of Anchorage Parks and Rec and with John Monroe, the head coach and program director for the Anchorage Skate Club. So stick around with me, Adam Verrier, and find out more about speed skating here on Outdoor Explorer. I'm Adam Verrier, your host here on Outdoor Explorer. It's the first week of November, and I'm out searching the Susitna Valley for ice that's thick enough so we can go skating without going swimming.
Here, we can test the ice.
Test the ice.
Nope.
Probably not skatable.
No.
I'm with Paxson Wolber and Dana Kerr. So far this morning, we found a couple of lakes that were completely open water, but then we found Keshwitna Lake, which had thick ice and a half inch of snow on it. So we skated there for a while, but then we wanted to explore further north, so we drove north to Talkeetna's X and Y lakes.
It's a little thin, little eggshell.
I'm seeing you poking at it, and you're not even able to hit ice with your stick there because it's nothing but water.
Oh no, there's a little shell.
What is that, 2 millimeters of ice, maybe 1 millimeter of
yeah.
ice. Not skatable by the looks of it.
No.
But then we walked about 100 yards through the woods, and we found a second little lake, and this one had 2 inches of ice. Maybe it was just thick enough to go skating on.
Oh, that's pretty deep.
Yeah.
How much ice do you think we have here?
My guess is somewhere between 2 and 4.
Two and four, huh?
Inches, yeah.
How much ice do you need before you feel like you want to go skating?
Well, it depends.
I mean, Paxson's already out here standing on his skates.
Yeah. Well, black ice without snow in it, which is what this is stronger than the opaque ice with snow in it because you get better crystalline structure. So black ice, you'll hear some people say a minimum of 4. I think there's a risk tolerance to every sport.
Dana here has skated under 2-inch ice before.
Okay.
I'm putting it on the public record. We usually look for maybe around 2. But there's not a huge amount of margin there, so you got to really be watching for transitions between different types of ice, because different parts of the ice form up at different rates and at different times. So sometimes if you have 2 inches and then you get to an area that maybe was in the sun a little bit more, and it's just a little bit thinner, now you're on really thin ice and potentially something that could break. But 2 inches of good black ice like this is considered pretty good.
Well, I've noticed that I'm the only one here wearing a life jacket. I'm also the only guy standing on shore. So that says something about risk tolerance, I guess, right here, just between the three of us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the drive up here was probably a lot more dangerous than skating, to be honest. I mean, which maybe says as much about the roads in Alaska as skating, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you have 2 inches of good black ice, which we do here, I mean, the risk of falling through here is like basically zero, but you could, you could trip or hit your head or something if you're not wearing a helmet. Those would probably be bigger risks in this particular spot. But I mean, I don't know what the whole lake is like here.
Well, there again, you know, I said earlier, I'm the only guy here with a life jacket, but I also am the one guy without a helmet on. So, well, that's interesting. That's something to put in our pipes and smoke, I guess.
Can you say that on public radio?
I think you can.
Okay, now you can.
Well, then let's go skating. I'll put my skates on and I'll come out there on the lake and find you. Cool. Where are we right now? What's the name of this lake? Do we know?
It's one of the XY lakes.
So we're up by Talkeetna. Yeah. We're right around Talkeetna someplace. On an X Lake or a Y Lake or one of the Talkeetna Lakes. I think jointly they're called the Talkeetna Lakes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful weather. Sunny, really nice black ice, totally clear, you know, down to the murky bottom of the lake.
Right.
But this is about as good as it gets, honestly. This is really good.
Well, I'm going to put some skates on. I'll see you out there. So today on Outdoor Explorer, we're talking with Dana Kerr and Paxson Wolber about skating, and we've come all the way north to someplace. We'll figure out where we are. I got picked up by Paxson in his car. He went to the airport and picked up Dana Kerr, who came in all the way from Juneau just to go skating today. Thank you for dragging me out of here into the wilderness, and welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Yeah, thanks for giving me an excuse to not be in the shop and go skating today. Appreciate it.
To introduce the two of you, Paxson, you produced the skates that you're standing on right now. Both of you are on these skates. And these are not hockey skates that you're on.
Yeah, these are Nordic skates. So my company, Ehrman Skate, has been making these for, this is our fifth season. So Nordic skates are, they're really long and stable and fast. They're really designed for natural outdoor ice. So they're a lot of fun on like big lakes and give you a lot of stability. They have a free heel and they use a Nordic ski boot and binding. And then that is mounted onto what my company, Ehrman, makes, which is the skate part itself. And then Dana here was actually one of the first people, the skates that she's on, those are some of the very first skates we ever made. So those are in their fifth season, I guess, now. And
the OGs.
Yeah.
The OGs. Well, we're talking about the skates. Let's go skate on them. We can skate talk at the same time probably, huh? So we are now, we're kind of over on the edge of this lake. And Paxson, where are we now? Where have you taken me?
I've never been to this lake before. I think this is one of the XY, is it the XY Lakes in Talkeetna?
X and so, Y only.
Yeah. Okay, XY.
I don't think there's a Z.
Yeah, so we're on the smaller of the two. The larger one had a bunch of open water, and then this smaller one just has maybe somewhere between 2 and 4 inches of really, really beautiful, clear black ice that you can see right through down to the base of the lake.
That sounds a little
spooky,
crack
there.
It? And look at me, I'm the only one wearing a life jacket.
That
today.
Was a perfectly timed sound effect. Kind of thin-ish ice, but yeah.
Well, and the three of us are standing all together at the same spot. Well, let's talk about this sport a little bit. This is a sport that you described to me on the way up here as a sport that's growing fairly quickly, although you're surprised that it isn't growing faster than it is.
Well, I'm surprised that we haven't all been doing this like my entire life, but it's one of those things kind of like fat biking or alpine touring, you know, AT skiing, where once you start doing it, it feels like the most kind of sensible thing in the world. But before it really, you know, it has to blow up. It has to move, come over and reach critical mass and grow to a point that there's a community around it. And I think that's what's really happening now. The skates have been sort of on the market a little bit. AMH, I think, has carried them since, I don't know, for a couple decades. But what we're seeing now is a community grow up and a lot of people sharing information about ice and kind of a like fun community atmosphere about like getting out and enjoying it and sharing safety tips and sharing equipment. And so that's what's really blowing up.
Well, yeah, and I would say you guys are on Ehrman skates. I'm on an old pair of Almgrens that must be 30 years old. And I bought these skates at AMH. It must have been in the late 1990s.
Cool.
So it's certainly been around for a while. But I would say I've seen a lot more people skating more recently than I did 20 or 30 years ago when there weren't too many people skating. And maybe it has something to do with the skate technology, which is still developing, clearly.
I mean, the skates maybe have gotten a little bit better, but the equipment's fairly simple. I think to go back to, like, fat biking, like, why did it take so long for people to realize if you make a bike with a really fat tire, it's really fun on snow? I mean, these things seem, like, obvious in retrospect, but there's just this kind of critical moment where it goes from being a novelty thing or like kind of a weird shoulder season activity to like reaching critical mass and becoming kind of the main event, like a big thing that people look forward to. But I don't know. I mean, our skates are, you know, we build them a little bit differently from the Nordic skates that have been on the market for a long time. But fundamentally, the activity is basically, it's basically the same. I mean, it looks like you're having a good time on your 30-year-old skates.
I'm doing all right. I'm still I haven't gotten wet yet. We'll say that.
Yeah.
So let's just start by talking about our day. You picked me up this morning in the car. Dana, she started her day in Juneau. Now we're in Talkeetna. We're going skating. But we didn't get to skate at the first lake we went to. We dropped by a lake, and Dana, you got this pole in your hand, this stick that's got a metal tip on the end of it. What have you been doing with that thing today, and why do you have it in your hand right now?
Yeah, so these are ice probes. I think a lot of us started using them, at least in Paxson's and my friend group, like the last 2.5-3 years.
You said an ice what?
Ice probe.
And probe, so, an ice yeah. probe,
or,
yes.
Or just ice poles. Ice poles, ice probes.
Well, I've been calling it a stick all day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's go left maybe, huh?
Okay.
We'll get back to that thin ice.
Yeah.
See if we survive it another lap.
Yeah, so it's basically a metal spear. And what we use to test the ice, and so you can tell a few different things from it pretty rapidly. We'll spear it into the ice and see if the ice cracks. Like radial cracks are usually thinner ice, more unstable ice. You know, we're testing the depth of the ice, as you can hear the cracking there.
That was a thin spot.
Yeah. So we'll check the depth of the ice, the consistency of the ice. You can have, it's not, ice safety isn't all about thickness, so kind of how the ice breaks off, if it's coming in large chunks off versus if it's cantling and it's crumbling, can kind of give you a good idea just for a rapid, quick test of the consistency and depth of the ice. And so because this is natural ice and there's inlets and outflows to a lot of the lakes that we skate, or like big glacial lakes can have a ton of variability, it's just really nice to have something that can give you a quick test to kind of give you an idea of how safe is this, or do we need to turn around and go a different route.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA, and today we're out skating on thin early season ice in the Susitna Valley with Paxson Wolber and Dana Kerr.
Well, the interesting thing for me here that has happened to us over the last 30 or 40 minutes is that there's a lake right on the other side of that hill. It must be 100 meters away from here, maybe 150 meters.
Yeah.
And you tried to probe that one, and what was the result of that?
A lot of splashing sounds.
So, yeah, eggshell thin in some places and just pure water.
Yeah.
But here we are skating on, you said you think the ice here is approximately how deep, do you think?
When we put the ice probe into the ice, we can see the cracking underneath us, and it looks like it's about 3 to 4 inches.
Okay,
maybe a little bit less in the far side of the lake where the sun is on it, and it was cracking. It keeps cracking every time we skate over it.
Right. Yeah, and I will admit that the last time we skated over it, I don't know if you saw it, but I saw a shooting crack go out in front of my in front of my foot there.
Which can happen even on really thick ice. You can sometimes get shooting cracks, especially as the sun starts going down, or like the temperature's changing, the ice flexes and breaks and cracks a lot, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's too thin. Like you can be out on a Klutna and there can be a foot of ice, and then as the sun goes down, it's just like boom, boom, like big cracks, and they do happen under your feet. It's very startling. Like you never fully get used to it. But yeah, even pretty supportive ice can crack, although I think the stuff that was cracking under our feet, it's probably just a little on the thinner side.
Right.
Probably two to three inches.
Well, we are just probably 100 meters away from open water on another lake. So it's fascinating to me that you're on one lake here, and we've got 2 to 4 inches of ice, and just 100 meters away, there's a lake that was, I would say, probably 60% open, 40% eggshell ice. So it just goes to show how much the ice can vary. I suppose moving water underneath the surface of the lake would make a big difference too. And you got to really watch for open streams, I would think. Did I say open water? I meant moving water.
Yeah. I mean, we tend to skate stationary water. Mostly, the vast majority of what we skate are lakes. There are some really slow moving sloughs, like Rabbit Slough or the Jim Creek area, or like Susitna Flats maybe has some flowing areas. So you know, start to get into a little bit of flowy stuff, but generally pretty slow moving. Skating on rivers is something I basically don't do at all. There's just a lot more, there's already enough variability on lakes, and rivers are just even more variable. And then, you know, if you do break through the ice on a lake, you get yourself out, you dry yourself off, you know, get warm and comfortable again. We all carry, you know, change of clothes and a dry bag on our backs on a longer trip. But on a river, you know, there's the possibility of you can get pulled under the ice, as, you know, everybody in Alaska knows, since it happens to, you know, snow machiners almost every winter. You know, to the best of my knowledge, it hasn't happened to any Nordic skaters, but I don't really skate rivers personally, and I generally discourage people from doing it. It's just a completely next level of risk.
I suppose we have the luxury, since this is, for most of us, just a recreational thing, that you don't have to take any more risk than necessary. You've come all the way from Juneau. So do you skate in Juneau much?
I do. It's a shorter season out there. But typically, I've been able, Mendenhall has, since I've been living there the last 2.5 years, has gotten at least 2 freezes a year. And so skate that lake. And then there's a couple of lakes just in Midtown there called Twin Lakes that you can skate out there. And then there's Windfall Lake, which you can hike out to. So there's options there. Not being on the road system, there's not quite, you can't just, you know, drive 200 miles to go someplace else like here. So there's a lot more options in South Central, but it is fun to get out in Juneau.
Yeah. How would you rate the, I heard Paxson earlier today saying that this was best ice of the season for him so far. Of course, it's early in the season. It's first week of November.
This is my second day skating, or third day skating, just for the record.
So the bar is low, but how do you rate this ice that we're on now? What do you think, in your general experience? Was this like A+, grade A prime ice, or is this kind of within the range of average for you?
I'd say this is probably A-, B+
okay.
Ice. The rating system's a bit subjective. But generally, black ice that you're skating over and you don't hear much, that's, if you're just coasting, that's A+.
We pulled into this kind of shallow spot, a little bay in this small lake, and we're looking down through the ice, and I see a log underneath there. I don't see any animals or any fish down there, but I can see the bottom of the lake, and it's beautiful.
It's like mind-blowing, the stuff that you see in or under or on the ice. Seeing ice that's jumbled up and refrozen into vertical plates underneath you, but the surface is totally smooth. Or seeing, like a lot of ice you think of as black or white, but a lot of the ice that we skate in these wetland areas, it's like really dark purple or bright red or orange. So there's a lot of really interesting colors. And then, like you mentioned, animals. Sometimes you'll see muskrats swimming below the ice, and then, you know, the vegetation and all the living things around the lake are also affecting the ice. So like there's a certain type of, I believe it's a certain type of bacteria that leaves this really, really vivid purple stain on the ice. So like that's very shocking and interesting to see, like the intersection of plants and animals, so sort of biology and physics and whatever else is like, sort of weather is kind of acting on the ice. It creates this just infinite array of crystals and colors and variations and surprises. And I don't go that long without seeing something new. And I've done a lot of skating. You know, there's places in Alaska where there are crashed airplanes underwater and you can skate over them. Or, you know, you skate in the Mat-Su and there's the occasional beer can. And fish, obviously. Like there's a fish called the Alaska Blackfish that can live between layers of ice, and they often get trapped like out at Jim Creek or Rabbit Slough or something. You'll be swimming along skating along, and they'll be swimming under the ice, but they'll be trapped between layers of ice, so it's like they're right under your feet and they're just like darting around. And it's wild ice is just such an interesting, fascinating surface to do the sport on. So, yeah, it's not... We are all standing on the same place. But yeah, ice never gets old. It's not just like a means to make the sport work. It's like in and of itself just this amazing thing you get to experience every time you go skating.
Is that the prime reason that you like coming out? This is a sport that I know that you love. You told me on the way up here that you just love this sport, and it's something that you've totally dived into. So much so that you've started your own skate company to make skate so that you can do it and other people can do it. What do you think? What do you like most about wild ice skating? And another question I want to ask you is, do you just go and skate around laps, for example, in Anchorage, or does that have no interest to you?
I do sometimes kind of skate laps. Like, I'll go out to Westchester with my dog sometimes and just do some laps there. Or I've gone to Cuddy Park a couple times and just skated around, and that's nice. But to sort of go into your first question there, I think what I like most is that, like, the wild ice, it turns these really familiar places, and it makes them completely new. And it makes these experiences, it's such an adventure to come out to these places that I've been before and see them in this completely different light and see them in this completely different way. Like if we came out here, I've never canoed on this lake or anything, I don't think, but if we had come out here in the summer, we would have, you know, potentially had a really nice experience, like paddling around and seeing birds and stuff. But then you come out here in the winter and suddenly we're looking down between our skates at all this like underwater, foliage and cool colors. And we're going really fast. And then we're constantly having to test the ice and assess it and experience it in all these different ways. So, like, all these places that I recreated at when I was a kid, I'll go out to Sand Lake, and it's, like, suddenly an adventure to go out there. And we're, like, testing the ice. And we're like, oh, it's a little thin over here. You know, it's thick enough over here. You can weave around this dock here. And it just makes a lot of these it's like a complete reset on the place that I grew up, which is Anchorage. And yeah, suddenly everything is like fresh and new and exciting and adventurous. And I love that like sense of adventure with skating. I love going out to new places too. Like skating Ski Lack has been, which I've done for a couple seasons in a row. I didn't catch it last year, but like that's so thrilling to really explore a big, vast wilderness kind of landscape on skates too. But yeah, it's that feeling of, like, it's so different from rink sports where you're playing a game against other people. You're playing a competitive game, and Nordic skating or wild ice skating generally is about exploring the outdoors. And I sometimes kind of describe it like, imagine, you know, you like walking, but you only ever walked around a track at, you know, the local middle school. And then suddenly someone on a sunny day takes you hiking and you're like, holy crap, you know, this is a completely different thing. And like, this is actually incredible and like an adventure. And wild ice skating is kind of that step for skating. Like, you're not in a rink, you're adventuring in the outdoors. And like, you're experiencing these familiar places in a very new way and experiencing new places in this really, really adventurous way.
Yeah. And there's no mosquitoes. So I guess
there's no mosquitoes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep skating. Dana, you come, you know, Paxton was just talking about rink sports. You come from the rink, don't you? I mean, you live in Juneau now, where you're a doctor, but did you grow up playing hockey? I think that I understood that.
Yeah, I grew up playing hockey, and I played in college as well.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I came over.
Where'd you play, just out of curiosity?
Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Rensselaer, okay.
Yeah. And I actually got in to Nordic skating. I think the first time I had really seen Nordic ice skates was 2019. Paxton invited me out with a bunch of friends to go to Portage Lake. And recreationally, I'm usually one of the strongest skaters in the group. And I had my hockey skates on, and most of the group had Nordic skates. And I kept up, but it was like six of my strides to one of theirs. And I wasn't used to the feeling of having to suck wind on skates to keep up with a recreational group. And then
a recreational group.
And then the other thing I noticed is going across, there were snowdrifts across the lake because these big glacial lakes have so much variability. And they could just pop their skates off and walk across the snow. Or I'd have to crawl or, you know, butt scoot or get creative. And so I thought, what are these? And so I ended up getting a pair. And hockey skates are great for explosion, agility, quick turns. But uneven ice surfaces or surfaces where there's cracks or traverses, this just opens up a whole new world. And so I really got into it. And one of my favorite parts of Nordic skating is the multi-sport days where you can ski or skate or mountain bike up to a lake, or like we've done a couple of big loops either hiking to different lakes or going through like marshes and wetlands like the Susitna Flats and Rabbit Slough, and just opening up different areas that would be really difficult on ice skates. I mean, on hockey skates, excuse me.
So maybe the Nordic skates are a bit of a tool that could be almost a winter version of pack rafts, for example, which
exactly.
are tools that some people go out sport pack rafting, I suppose, but other people just use the pack raft to be able to get across rivers or to get down rivers after accessing the mountains a different way.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and today we're out skating on thin early season ice in the Susitna Valley. We'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and today I'm out skating on early season ice near Talkeetna with Paxton Wolber and Dana Kerr.
So if somebody's thinking about skating on thin ice like we're doing, what do they need to know before they can get out and do it? First of all, I guess they need some skates. They need some skates of the type that you make, and there's other manufacturers too.
Well, I'm biased toward my own company's product, right. Of course. But no, honestly, I really enjoy skating with people on whatever they're comfortable skating on. I'm happy to go out with people on hockey or figure skates. And our friend Laura Kotlowski came up a couple winters ago, and we went on these amazing, amazing trips in the Chugach during that incredible October window 2 years ago. And she was on figure skates, and I mean, she's a great figure skater. So I'm happy to skate with anybody. Nordic skates are, more efficient, and they're faster, and they're comfortable, so they have some advantages. But as long as you have skates that you like, I would say that's all you need. And beyond that, you know, the basic safety gear, like the essential piece of safety gear, is these self-rescue picks that we have around our necks.
Okay. And where do you get those? Can you get those at local shops?
You can get some kind of rudimentary ones at some of the big box stores, but some of those are not great quality. Some of them actually sink.
They'll
dead
drag
serious.
You down.
I don't know if they'll drag you down, but they don't do a lot of use when they're on the bottom of the lake. As incredible as that sounds, some of them really do sink. I really prefer the Scandinavian style, which Ehrman sells them. I think AMH often has them in stock as well.
Okay.
Hording Marmot, Backcountry Bike and Ski in Palmer. They're not super expensive. The nice Nordic Scandinavian style ones that sit around your neck and have the little holster, they tend to run like $30 to $35.
Okay.
So, not a huge barrier to entry there. And then if you're any distance from a car or from a warm place, having a full change of clothes and maybe a towel in a dry bag is really essential for safety, so you can get warm and dry if you go into the water. I know that doesn't seem like a cool piece of safety gear, but it's super important if you need it. And then ice poles or probes, I think, have gotten a lot more popular just because they help prevent you from having a safety situation in the first place.
Okay.
Even 2 years ago, we were really testing ice by just looking for cracks and bubbles and then just kind of stepping on it. And it generally worked out for us. But once you get an ice pole and start testing, it just gives you that, it tells you what you really need to know, which is actually not how thick the ice is, it's how supportive it is. And if you play around with them for a while, you can really get a sense of how a strike with an ice pole correlates to its ability to hold you. So, for some people, two or three strikes of the ice till you break through into water, and they feel comfortable skating that. I mean, obviously it depends on the pole, depends on how hard you hit the ice, but you get a sense for it pretty quickly. But I think that's an important piece of kind of safety gear that has gotten a lot, they've really gotten popular in the last couple seasons. And then I really recommend that everybody wear a helmet. Falls on ice, you're not falling very far, but you can go down really hard. The classic fall is that people go down backwards. So if something snags you or you just lose your balance, you can fall down, kind of flip backwards and then hit the back of your head. And we tend to wear ski helmets, like downhill ski helmets. There's probably other kinds of helmets that work okay too. To the best of my knowledge, there's no such thing as a wild ice helmet, but downhill ski helmets work really, really well. They're really comfortable.
They're very warm. You can hear through them just fine. They're, like, really well engineered. It's a big product. You know, it's a big market, so...
And I think the more the later mountain bike helmets also tend to come over the back of your head more than helmets from maybe 10 or 15 years ago also.
Yeah. I mean, some people just wear hats, too, and that's probably... I'm sure that's better. Of course, that's better than nothing, but... yeah, I really, really recommend people to wear a helmet,
okay. which,
you know, Ermin does not sell. Go to your local ski shop. I never want to sell boots or helmets or clothing or anything like that, but good to have.
Okay. And Dana, do you ever skate without one of these ice probes?
Yes. If it's a lake like Westchester, if the city's checked in, it's 12 inches of ice, and I know the ice. I don't bring the probe, but if it's something that I haven't been on yet, or I'm uncertain of the depth of the ice, then I bring the probe. Bigger lakes, glacial lakes, I always bring a probe, but yeah, like skating Westchester and Anchorage, I won't necessarily bring a probe.
Okay.
And, you know, another thing about the ice poles is we often skate with just one and just use it to test, but they're always sold in pairs. And the way they're often used in Scandinavia is they are used to double pole as well. They do add some efficiency on long trips. You know, you're starting to get tired. You are able to use your arms when you're also double poling. And they help on really rough ice, too. So sometimes people, you know, even like my friends and I, if we're on really bad rough ice, you know, you bring two poles and it gives you a huge amount of stability. And some people who aren't as confident about their balance really benefit from having a pair of ice poles as well. You can use ski poles, but everything about them is just a little bit different than an ice pole, from the tip to the shaft design to the grip placement to, like, the style of grip. So it really is a different product, even though they superficially look similar. It's been interesting seeing ice poles get really, really popular in the last couple of years. We started importing those, I think, about 2 years ago, and we sold quite a few of them, and I feel like most people I see now on more remote lakes, they're carrying them now.
I suppose you could also use an ice pole for self-rescue in certain situations, maybe.
Should always have...
The ice picks.
Those picks, yeah. And the good Scandinavian ones that hang around your neck... They're designed so that they're always there, even if you get in sort of a crazy chaotic crash through the ice. They're sized so they won't float up around your head.
Mm.
And they have little strings that attach, so they're attached to a holster, so you really can't lose them.
Okay.
It's a great... They're a very, very refined tool. The Scandinavians, Nordic skating is called Nordic for a reason, and they have a very active club scene, and they collect a lot of data. And they've really dialed in a lot of the products pretty well.
Some of the safety products.
Yeah, yeah.
So have you ever fallen through the ice yourself?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I mean, sure. How'd that go?
Kind of a rite of
passage. You're still here with us.
I mean,
do you have any stories where you managed to get yourself out and you thought, well, that was kind of crazy?
No, not at all. I mean, it happens that if you're messing around on thin ice, and we're intentionally, like, we know that we're on thin ice, we're prepared for it, you'll sometimes put a leg in or a foot in, or you'll break in and kind of somehow go up to your waist and then get out and not get wet. Of course, it's possible to fall in, and like a really full immersion up to the top of your head is possible too. But
I have a friend named Trond who just fell through the ice last week.
Was that Hidden Lake?
I think it might be where he was. I don't know where that guy. I never know where he's going. But he said that he went through the ice, and he said he went completely underwater.
Yeah.
Of course, this was a week ago, and it's only the first week of November. So, maybe he was taking his chances there. But he came out of it all right. And I don't know what kind of safety equipment he had. I didn't ask him. You know, he was with us, so I figured I didn't really need to get the details. But he went through the ice, and I've gone through the ice at Potter Marsh. I remember going through the ice. The ice was probably 2 feet deep, so I went through and ended up down in the muck at the bottom of Potter Marsh, and it all worked out just fine.
Now that taking a swim at Potter truly is a wild ice rite of passage in the Anchorage area. I've gone swimming there as well. I actually lost one of the first pair of Nordic skates I ever bought. I broke through the ice. There's a lot of thin ice in the little passageways between the lagoons at Potter. and I broke through and I fell in up to my waist and jumped out, and I was missing a skate. It had gotten stuck in the mud, and I was like, oh man, these things are expensive. Like, I can't walk away from this. So I was fully out sitting on the ice again. So I was like, I got to do it. So I jumped back in and fished around in the mud. I couldn't find it, got out, and then jumped back in again and got it and pulled it out, and the binding had broken off. AMH was nice enough, which is where I bought them. They were super nice, and they replaced the binding for free, which they really didn't have to do. So I was very grateful for. But yeah, getting wet in Alaska in the winter, obviously something you really don't want to have happen. But the danger that comes from those experiences is it really depends on how prepared you are and where you are. You know, if you're right by your car, you just get in your car and turn the heat on. It doesn't matter at all. If it's really, really cold and you're really deep in the backcountry and you're by yourself or something, you could have a really serious situation that you need to recover from.
Yes, I can say about my Potter Marsh immersion that, like I said, it was only knee deep when I went into it. But I got out of the water, and it was really, really cold, and that's why I was skating. I think I probably would have gone skiing instead, but it was cold and there wasn't any snow on the ground. Yeah. So I went skating instead. So I got myself out of the marsh, and by the time I got back to the car, which was only probably 200 yards away, my lower legs were encased in ice.
Yeah.
So I managed to get into the car. I couldn't take the skates off. I got into the car. I think I might have been on hockey skates. And I had to wait in the car with the warm air blowing on my feet for probably 45 minutes or so before they even melted enough for me to get off. So if I had been in the backcountry someplace and didn't have my car nearby, yeah, I would have to deal with it. And I don't know what that would have, you know, maybe starting a fire or something. Maybe not that easy to do when, you know, depending on the situation.
Well, that's one point in favor of Nordic skates, too, that, you know, hockey and figure skates have a lot of lacing, and if it gets wet, it freezes solid, and you really just cannot get the boot off. And if you have to walk to your car or walk to a house or, you know, somewhere to get warm again, sometimes, I mean, you're just going to be stuck with that thing, you know, like your foot's going to be encased in boot and ice, and it's going to be pretty difficult to deal with. Nordic skates... you know, can get iced up. It certainly happens. You have to chip stuff off. But in general, because the boot clips out of the binding, you just take your skates off and then you just start walking.
Yeah.
So a boot freezing up when you're on Nordic skates is less of a big deal. And then also the boots are just designed to kind of get snow and ice and stuff packed around them. So they tend to not sort of encase your feet the way a hockey skate would.
Dana, you've come all the way from Juneau for this.
Yeah.
What do you like about this sport so much that has brought you all the way, airplanes and car rides, and to come up here and go skating?
Yeah, a few different things. You know, I think it's always nice, especially in the winter, to get outside and just be in the outdoors. And so getting out, getting some daylight just helps me feel better mood. Skating, I tell some people, like, maybe it's a flow state, I'm not sure, but it's kind of like my sneak attack sport. On these huge glacial lakes, you can just, like, you know, see glaciers, or you're looking down and you're looking at rocks and stuff underneath the ice, or you're in a marsh and it's almost like a maze game, and you can, sometimes you don't even realize you're exercising, you're just going out and doing these things, and it is exercise, but it's just, like, it brings you to a whole different worlds, and it's, I think I mentioned in the car, for someplace early, it's almost like a Pavlov's sport, right? Like, you don't know if there's going to be ice, so it's this intermittent reward system where you're like, you know, half the game is there going to be ice? Is it going to be thick enough? Are we going to go? And so when you find it and it's beautiful like this, it's just such an amazing day, and you're just gliding through.
Yeah. Well, I've had a wonderful day with both of you today. Well, thank you for joining me. Dana Kerr and Paxton Wolber, thanks for coming out and taking me wild ice skating today.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
I'm Adam Verrier, your host here on Outdoor Explorer, and for the second segment of our show, I have two guests here with me in the studio. The first is Brad Cook. He's the recreation manager for the Anchorage Parks and Rec Department. And John Monroe is here. He is the program director and head coach for the Anchorage Skate Club. In the other section of this show, I went out skating in Talkeetna, and we enjoyed the outdoors, and we talked about the beauty of skating and how much fun it is to go out skating. But here in Anchorage, where we all live, we don't have to travel all the way up into the mountains to find a lake to ski. We got plenty of lakes right here in Anchorage, and also we've got a skating oval and tons of places to skate. Brad, can I ask you? What's your job, or how does your job relate to skating here in Anchorage?
I'm a facilitator, and so I provide the resources and the avenues for folks to go out and get on the ice.
And so you don't actually, does the municipality run any skating programs or any events, or are you just to make sure that the ice is in good shape?
No, we're in a great growth cycle with our recreation programming right now, and we've got a lot of events throughout the year. We started a new one that's near and dear to my heart last year called Skater Tots, because I just wanted to name something Tots. but it was a cool one because it brings ice skating to the east side of Anchorage. And so we did that one at Chance New. All of our events are free. We have the big ones like the Solstice event coming up on December 19th. And we'll get over 1,000 people at Cuddy Family Midtown Park in that. That event's really designed to highlight the oval. The oval that we have in Anchorage at Cuddy is a pretty special oval in the United States. And we often get folks that don't know it's there. So that event's for that. We also have the Westchester Family Skate presented by ConocoPhillips. That's kind of our most well-known one. It's every Saturday. It's free. It's in the sun. It's in the cold. It's in all weather down at Westchester. And then we also have the Solstice Skate at Cuddy, but we maintain the lake there. So there's a little bit of pond skating around there for the littles in addition to the oval. And then we were looking for something for that affordable, healthy way to do Valentine's Day. And so we started the Sweetheart Skate a few years ago. And that one is really kind of cool. And that was really just designed to be something different other than just going to the traditional cliche dinner. A lot of folks will come skate for a little bit and then go to dinner, or go to dinner, then come skate with us. And it's special. And then we have the Ferrandi does something after our Westchester. So the Westchester Family Skate goes for about till February 21st. And then Ronda usually does the weekend after that.
And the Westchester Family Skate, I think you might have said when that's happening, but maybe other people didn't hear it also. When does that happen? That's on Saturday mornings?
It's on Saturdays. Yep. Saturdays. From January 10th to February 21st.
Okay.
We got music. We got hot chocolate. Something we started a few years ago that's really cool for beginners is we have free ice skates for kids to borrow. And we got these super cute ones this year. They're the tiniest little skates. They have double blades on them to help the kids be stable. And then we also started 2 years ago having Nordic skates, which are those really long, I think you call them clap skates.
Yeah.
And we have three different binding types. And so if you bring your skate ski boots or your backcountry boots with a cuff on them, we probably have a set that you can borrow for free.
Okay. Yeah. And the double bladers for the little kids.
They're so cute. They're just tiny.
Yeah. I learned to, I guess my first skates were double bladers. Of course, they strapped on to my snow boots.
Yes.
But they're tough to get on edge. I have found that out.
Yes.
The Skater Tots, that happens at the same time. So you've got Westchester skating on Saturdays, but then Skater Tots, I looked it up, it's on Wednesday nights, I guess so.
Yeah. It's the nuances, right? We got to have time to dry the skates out. And
okay.
So it is timed. So there's 2 days of drying time from the skates from the previous event.
It sounds like these skates stay pretty busy then.
There's always details in what we do. But yeah, they live in a van. And so we drive the van up. It's got all of our audio system, our tents, our hot chocolate, everything. And both events are free.
Okay.
And both of them have music for fun. And then they've got the warm drinks for everybody.
Have you been seeing participation rise in that event as it's gone on? These events haven't been going that long. I think you started them.
The Westchester has been a really long legacy event, and it's kind of cool. This year is a pivotal year for us where we're seeing numbers go back to pre-COVID levels, which is really cool. We just finished our fall running series, and we broke our pre-COVID numbers this year finally. So
okay.
It's been a slow comeback. We've seen that with the marathon. We've seen that with these other events. It's cool to see everyone getting back out.
Okay. And John, you're with Anchorage, the Anchorage Skate Club. You're the coach, the head coach with Anchorage Skate Club, and you're also with the Anchorage Speed Skating Club. What is the difference between those clubs, and what is the mission of each of those clubs?
The Anchorage Skate Club is an organization that started about 2011, 2012, and our mission is really simple. It's to get kids out skating. And so we run programs usually in conjunction with elementary schools. Kids basically get to skate for an hour after school with instruction and qualified instructors, and skates if they need them. Helmets are provided if they need them. So we get them out in that sort of first hour after school, having fun, learning basic skills, and really coming to appreciate the fact that you can skate all winter in Anchorage, notwithstanding last winter was not great. And with the Alaska Speed Skating Club, that basically is a little different. Alaska Speed Skating is the competitive speed skating club in Anchorage. And so they run both indoor and outdoor programs. The Anchorage Skate Club, we basically only do outdoor programs because that's our mission, is outdoor skating.
I see. Right. The Anchorage Speed Skating Club also does short track speed skating, which happens in a hockey rink.
Yeah. And just to clarify, it's Alaska Speed Skating, not Anchorage.
Alaska Speed Skating
Club. Lots of problems with, you know, with that one. But yeah, no, we do. The Alaska Speed Skating Club does short track as well as long track. Their short track season runs from mid-September to almost the end of March. And then the long track season on the Cuddy Oval runs typically from when we get ice, which is usually a little after Thanksgiving, until usually the end of February, depending on weather.
Okay. And you are the head coach for the Anchorage Skate Club. Your background in skating goes a long way back. You've been Canadian national champion in short track speed skating, I believe. You were Olympic team coach for the Dutch short track speed skating team, which, I mean, who skates more than the Dutch? That is skating central right there. You've been to several Olympics, I believe.
I've coached for the better part of 40 years, and I never won a Canadian championship. I did win the North Americans one year, which I was kind of lucky, but, you know, that's part of sport. And then I've coached, of course, in the U.S. for a number of years in the late 90s, and then I coached the Dutch team for the Vancouver Olympics and the Polish team for several years after that.
And so if you want to learn how to skate, we can't do much better than we got the coaching right here in Anchorage. What kind of programs do you run? If I want to learn to be a better or learn to speed skate at all, I see the sport. I think I want to go fast on skates. How do I go about, do I contact the Anchorage Skate Club or the Alaska Speed Skating Club? How do I track you down?
The Alaska Speed Skating Club is probably your better bet. They, for the last several years, have run a very straightforward intro beginner program where basically anybody can purchase for $30, plus you get the skates, you get the coaching. It's two sessions, so typically each session, depending on the day, is an hour or an hour and a half with the club, and that gives people a chance to try out speed skates, to try out coaching with the club, to get a feel for what it's all about. Because, you know, unlike hockey or figure skating, it doesn't get as much TV exposure, so people tend not to always understand, you know, what it's like. And so that's their way of going about that. The Anchorage Skate Club in the past has run kids programs in the evenings at Cuddy Oval. We haven't done that for a few years, but we are considering restarting it this winter. As Brad had mentioned, participation levels for programs seem to be coming back to pre-COVID levels. So we're getting to the point where that's for us, you know, definitely something we'd like to do.
In case you're just joining us, I'm Adam Verrier, your host here on Outdoor Explorer. I have two guests here with me in the studio. Brad Cook, he's the recreation manager for the Anchorage Parks and Rec Department. And John Monroe is here. He is the program director and head coach for the Anchorage Skate Club. If I'm already a pretty decent skater, or I know how to skate, and I just want to go skating in Anchorage, it sounds like I've got a lot of options, because you guys are grooming ice in a variety of places, maybe six or eight different places around Anchorage.
Yeah, the beauty of Anchorage as a community is you can just get out and get some right here in town. And a lot of us don't want to wait till our weekends to do this fun stuff, and so we do it in the evenings and on lunch breaks, and then go farther, like the Talkeetna trip on your weekends when you can get a little drive time under you. Got some main lakes that we do, like Westchester and Cheney Lakes are the big ones. The ribbons are going to be like Chancenew has a really cool ribbon. It's big enough for adults to socialize and skate with their kids, but small enough to keep an eye on your kids, which is really cool. Westchester underwent a change in management a few years ago where it's a little bit more of an adventurous loop. So we've got turns in it so you can practice your left and your right turns, and it goes a little farther and it's really cool. Westchester usually has a burn barrel too. So it's got some heat if you want to stay out a little bit longer. And then we do rinks around town as well. A lot of the ASD does their own rinks, but we also do like Delaney, where we have a figure skating area and a hockey area. We've got Tekishla, where we've got a rink. We have a partner that does the Bonnie Cusack rink down by the Chester Creek Sports Complex by Sullivan Arena. That's a colder part of town, so that ice tends to last a little bit longer than the other ones. And a lot of the stuff that is paved, like the Oval and the Chansnew, we can put ice in earlier because we don't need that thickness. We can build it in about under a week, whereas some of the other one can take 1 to 2 weeks to build.
Okay. And when does the Oval get ice on it? When does that typically happen?
We always try and aim for around the week after Thanksgiving. We don't know if we're going to hit it this year just because we've had a little bit warmer temperatures. But once we get cooperative weather, it takes about a week or two. Okay, I suppose,
yeah, not only do you have to have cold weather, but I guess you have to have frozen ground underneath it.
You do, yeah. And we think typically Chansnew is the first one to come in.
Okay.
For us.
And how about Westchester? I mean, I think if I went down to Westchester right now, I'd get wet for sure. How do I find out when Westchester is thick enough? Because I know that's something. You just have to wait. You can't. You got to drive a truck on it before anything can happen there as far as grooming.
Yeah, but we go down there and drill it. We pop a hole in the ice and measure it regularly. We're looking for about a foot of ice to support the weight of the vehicle and the water tank inside it. But on our website, we measure the ice and we write it down. Every time we write it, we go down there and do it. You can check it on our parks website.
So you can try to figure out you'll know when it's coming, when it's getting close, because you'll be monitoring that.
You can watch the numbers and the anticipation can build and you can get excited. And
that's on the Anchorage Parks and Rec website then.
It is. Yeah. Okay. We move a link to our homepage in the winter called Ice and Trail Status. And so it'll be one of the three pictures on our homepage in the winter months.
Well, we talked a little bit about programs for kids or learning to skate. If I'm an adult and I've come from some warm place, I didn't grow up skating, and I want to learn to skate, I feel like I need some instruction to even... I mean, I've been to big cities in the lower 48. Chicago is the place I'm thinking of. And a lot of tourists were out there trying to skate a couple of weeks before Christmas. And I thought, this does not look fun for these people who just cannot figure out how to operate skates. They've obviously never had any lessons. If I'm an adult here in Anchorage, I want to learn how to skate. Can I talk to the Anchorage Skate Club, to the Alaska Speed Skating Club, and just learn how to do the basics?
You can talk to either one. Anchorage Skate Club is probably your better bet. We have part-time instructors throughout the winter for our kids' programs, but a number of them are also happy to do private lessons or small group lessons for adults. And I've done a bunch of those over the years. And it's always interesting to hear from adults that they really feel like there's not an appreciation of how challenging it can be for adults, but it's not a fundamentally difficult skill for adults to learn. The biggest challenge, and I joke with adults all the time about this when I'm teaching, is rule number one is you're going to fall down. Rule number two is you're not going to bounce the same way you did when you were five. So we're going to teach you the basic skills of, okay, you're going to go down. Here's how not to hurt yourself. You know, here's how to get up. Is a fundamental skill that isn't obvious if you've never been on ice. For example, somebody who's moved up here from Florida, they never learned to walk on ice. And it's not a difficult skill, but we all learned it when we were, you know, still in diapers, so to speak. So best of all, contact us. People that are maybe feeling a little more confident about learning quickly are welcome to try it out with the Alaska Speed Skating Club. They don't have a specific requirement about having basic skating skills, but they do encourage people to kind of be, you know, honest with themselves to try it out. Very often, people that have a good athletic background will jump right in, and 20 minutes, they're moving competently and having fun.
Yeah, to go back to my experience in Chicago, I was there for something else a couple of years ago, and it was really eye-opening for me, because like you just referred to, we all grew up on skates and it just feels kind of natural to skate. And to see people who didn't sort of understand the vectors and the weight shift that's required for skating that we all know how to do, people really struggling with it. And I thought about other areas where I've struggled when I'm in a realm that I don't know anything about. And I think about how much a fish out of water I feel. So it was then that I started kind of to realize that skating is natural for everybody. It's not a hard skill to learn the basics, but if you don't understand weight shift and sort of how the vector skating skating vectors work, it's a tough nut to crack, I guess, for some people.
It can be. And yeah. I think one of the things that people have to remember is the way your brain works in terms of, you know, preserving you, it tends to do things that are not helpful. Like, you want to stand up straight, and to learn to skate, you have to learn to bend your knees a little bit so that your ankles are locked and stable. And for, you know, somebody learning to walk when they're a year old, that's exactly what the brain doesn't want to do. It wants to stand up straight. And if you've ever seen a, you know, a one-year-old kid walking around, they tend to walk in a way that's not very efficient, but keeps their head from hitting the ground.
Yeah.
But it isn't helpful. So once you get past that and realize what the basic keys are, most people pick it up relatively quickly.
Okay. Well, and Brad, if you've got, we have after school programs, I think Anchorage Skating Club does some of that. But I think that the Muni also facilitates that with the van that's, but do you do any sort of after school or school time programs? I mean, how do second graders get into skating around here through school? Can they? Do they?
So we don't do any school ice skating programs. We have after school programs at our recreation centers. We've got three of them that provide healthy avenues for kids. But the ice skating, we leave it to these guys. And my kids have taken their class and loved it. He came home on smiles and enjoyed it a lot. And they're doing a great job with it. But we don't have anything specific. Ours is more event-based.
Yeah. Okay. John, I want to ask you, what do you like most about skating? I mean, you've been skating your whole life. You obviously love this sport.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Canada, and I was actually one of the few people that taught themselves to skate, mainly because I was, you know, neither of my parents skated, and I wanted to play hockey. But what I love about skating is that you can glide. And if you think about what that sensation is that's unique to skating versus anything else, whether it's running, you know, playing other sports, you can glide. And I think that's the thing that if you're teaching anybody or learning for yourself, when you first get that sensation of just being able to glide what seems like forever, that's what sticks with you.
Yeah, I've heard other people describe it as magical, and it certainly felt that way last week when we were up at up in Talkeetna skating around on about 2 inches of ice. It's a wonderful feeling. Brad, is there anything else that that the Muni is doing about in regards to skating that we haven't talked about?
It's the thing that we often don't talk about, and that's the enormous skill set in our workforce that's doing this. We've got 8 people a day getting this ice ready for everybody 7 days a week.
Really?
A couple of them, like the Delaney figure skating, only get reset 4 days a week. But Westchester, Cheney, we're running that 7 days a week, hot mopping, and they are often forgotten heroes, and they work their butts off, and they do a really good job with what they're doing.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting out skating myself. The weather's cold. We got a little snow, but we've got cold weather. And I think I'm looking forward to a winter of skating. I may have to get out to the Skater Tots. I saw that. And when I saw Skater Tots, it's your name. You came up with it.
I love the Tots.
Yeah. But I was sort of thinking toys for tots, not tater tots. So the Tots, I had a little bit different. So I thought, maybe this is a kid's skating thing, but it's not. It's for everybody.
It's for everybody, you know, and it's a really cool thing because it's midweek. And so it's a lot of stuff. Everyone's got hockey on the weekends, and they're out of town at Alyeska on the weekends or Hilltop. But this is something midweek where you can meet your friends up in the evenings. We do it kind of in the after work time frame, so people can come after work, not have to leave early. And it's just great. And it's in a neighborhood park, so it's a chill, fun way to see your friends.
Well, so you can go on the Anchorage Parks and Rec website and find out about all these programs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We throw it all on the web. It's 2025.
Okay. Well, Brad, thank you so much for coming in. Brad Cook of Parks and Recreation and John Monroe from the Anchorage Skating Club and the Alaska Speed Skating Club. I got it right this time. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to me about speed skating and skating, just skating in general here in Anchorage.
Happy to be here. Thanks so much, Ed.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you on the ice.
You will. You've been listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA. I'd like to thank our producer, Tobin Shelby. And from all of the hosts here on Outdoor Explorer, I'm Adam Verrier, and I'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.